Okay, hello and welcome to the Alex and Nick Film Podcast. So it's been a couple of weeks. Last time was Looper. And we haven't actually been to see any films since because I've been incredibly ill and everything's been very chaotic and busy. So Nick's waiting for me to recover. And now we're going to come back with just basically, I think, essentially a winter preview episode. Don't worry, we will have reviews on the way. I'm going to see Beasts of the Southern Wild this Friday coming up, and obviously Skyfall comes up the following week, so we'll bring you reviews of those two films. And I'm also going to talk briefly about Invictus, which obviously is quite an old film, but that'll be a very small review of that. So we'll talk about a couple of big films that are basically coming out, which obviously will be reviewed in future episodes. Let's start first thing. We've talked a lot about The Hobbit. Obviously, that's going to be a big one, so we'll set that one aside. Similarly with Skyfall. That's probably my most anticipated film in the next couple of months, and that's a week and a half from now. So I'm looking forward to that one as well. But aside from that, we've got a couple of interesting ones. I mean, first of all is Les Miserables.
Yeah, which looks. I think it looks quite good.
Yeah, it's coming out. I think it's Christmas Day, is it?
Yeah, that's what the posters say.
Yeah, so
which is a bold choice in itself.
Yeah. Interestingly, I'm not sure whether it's the same in the UK, but certainly Django Unchained, the new Tarantino film, is coming out on Christmas Day. Definitely in America. I'm not sure about here. But yeah, if it is out here, then it'd be very, very different kind of films competing. I've read the book, but I haven't ever seen the musical, actually. So obviously, I'm currently in that mindset of, the actors don't look anything how I imagine the characters, that kind of classic adaptation thing. Yeah. I mean, you've seen the trailer, presumably. What did you think?
I thought they looked like they suited. I really like Hugh Jackman in a lot of the films. I liked Australia.
Yeah.
And obviously his Wolverine, aside from in Wolverine. which, again, was a mess, but I think not as bad as a lot of people sort of claimed.
Oh, I disagree.
I'm not saying it was good by any stretch.
For another day.
But yeah, I think Hugh Jackman's good. He's got a good singing voice. Yes. When I've heard him sing before, and I think he's up to the role.
Well, that's the interesting thing is that they're recording. Apparently, they're doing a lot of the singing was done live on the set, rather than kind of dubbed afterwards. Which, from the trailer anyway, seemed to give it a more naturalistic feel. I mean, I'm a fan of Anne Hathaway, and I thought that the song she was doing there sounded pretty good. And quite heartfelt, so that might really pay off that decision. Yeah. I'm not a fan of Russell Crowe, however, so I'm not sure how much I'm going to like his portrayal of the inspector.
Well, he's one of those actors that can act, but sometimes seems to choose not to.
I
think if Russell Crowe brings his A game to any film, it's not going to be a bad performance.
I suppose, yeah, since I haven't seen Russell Crowe's A game in. I didn't rate him massively in Body of Lies. I didn't think he was. Just the last couple of films he's done.
Robin Hood,
yes. I mean, these were all kind of. They weren't bad performances, but they weren't anything special. And so, with such a important role that he's got in this film, I'm a little bit disappointed that they haven't found someone else. Basically, but we'll see how it goes. There's that one. I mean, you've seen the musical, obviously.
Yeah.
Do you think it's kind of the cinematics? Is it cinematic? I mean, I've never seen it, so is the structure?
It's been a while since I've seen it.
Looking at the book, I wouldn't imagine how you could condense it down into a single film. Like for me, I would imagine it's far better suited to a TV series, kind of one of those BBC dramas.
Yeah, the six-part.
I personally can't imagine how they've condensed it. But well, if they're going for the musical, so.
If they're doing it as the musical script, I mean, it's not short. If I remember rightly, I think the musical is about three and a half hours.
Yeah. I imagine they've probably condensed it. Maybe to about two and a bit or something. Because Anna Karenina was two and a bit, I think. Just sort of a random period of comparison. But yeah, I'm not sure if audiences can accept a 3-hour long film. I suppose it'll be interesting in that for me it'll be the first time I've seen these characters and certainly heard most of the songs. Obviously some of the more famous songs I've heard before, but never in kind of in context of it, but for you it will be more of a comparison with
the stage the musical, production.
Yeah, and seeing whether it's better suited to the stage or whether it actually works really well on the screen. So we'll see when that one comes out.
Yeah.
In fact, that'll be a film we'll both be going to see. And are you coming to see Skyfall?
No.
Okay, so yeah, unlike Skyfall. Right, so the next film, Django Unchained, we briefly mentioned. I'm not sure if it's coming out for us in the UK on Christmas Day or in January for kind of Oscar time. Either way, it'll be really interesting. I read the script a while back, and I remember thinking that, you know, the bad guy was basically written for some big actor to come along and make it his own. Obviously, they've got Leonardo DiCaprio in that role, which I think will be really interesting because, you know, I think he's a great actor, but he has sort of fallen into, he does quite similar roles in that he's always a kind of conflicted, brooding hero. In the, and, you know, he's taken in a challenging direction. So obviously in Blood Diamond, he's more of an anti-hero and you know, he does a kind of slightly higher concept thrillers and things. But this is the first thing I can think of where he's an outright villain and a really nasty villain. Having read the script, and obviously you can see from the trailers as well, he's not a kind of, he's going full on here. The interesting thing for me will be, I assume there won't be any changes, but there is some serious swearing in the script.
It's a Tarantino film.
Yeah, but I mean, this is kind of full on. I can imagine actors being uncomfortable having to say some of the lines. So what I would be interested in is, after seeing the film, going back to the script and seeing if, you know, because I, you know, you do get things where actors just say, you know, I'm sorry, I can't say this. So it might be that they have to change some of it, or maybe they've gone in knowing, well, this is Tarantino. You know, his thing is writing scripts with amazing dialogue, so maybe they'll just go with it, and they've all signed on knowing that. But I guess we won't tell. I mean, the other thing I wasn't sure about was Jamie Foxx as Django. There were rumours that Will Smith was up for the part at one point. I think that would have been a really interesting one. I've never been too enthused by Jamie Foxx as an actor. But he, you know, the trailers, he seems fine. It's just sometimes you almost wonder what could have been with other actors who were apparently up for the part. But obviously, that's, you never quite know how true that is. Right, let's move on then. So that's coming out roughly around the new year. I don't know when it's coming out, but yeah.
And then Gangster Squad is slightly after? Or is that sooner?
Release dates on Achilles heel.
It's a similar time.
Yeah, they're all around the same time. So basically, I mean, I'm really looking forward to Gangster Squad. It's got a great cast. Looks very stylish.
Yeah.
They obviously had that thing with the reshoots, which will, you know, to see how that's affected the film and whether the structure feels weird at the end because of it. I mean, they'd already shot the scenes and things and pretty much finished it, and then they had to go back and reshoot because of that cinema shooting incident. Because obviously, usually when you get reshoots, it's a sign of a film that is struggling, basically.
But this wasn't a, like, we don't like the script anymore problem. Mm. It was, this seems a little insensitive to put this out 6 months later.
But yet you wonder whether often the thing with reshoots is that they jar with the rest of the film because it hasn't been done in mind. And obviously, this is done in better intention, but will it kind of mesh with all the others? I mean, you'd hope that it would. And it's only one scene as opposed to entire, you know, reams of the film.
Like Men in Black 3.
Exactly. So there is a big difference between Men in Black and the Gangster Squad reshoots.
The trailer for Gangster Squad, the music in it was just painful on the ears.
This is the new trend, isn't it, for kind of hip-hop music and stuff like that in trailers. To be honest, sometimes I think it does work quite well.
Well, sometimes, but only when it's not painful.
I mean, to be honest, I didn't think it was as bad as some other uses I've seen in trailers. Simply because, for me, it usually works when you've got a visually stylish film, which I think Gangster Squad is.
Yeah.
So that it kind of feels more modern because of it. And especially because also it's an action film, so you've got this kind of momentum and coolness to it, which hip hop kind of. I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't say it's the best choice of music. No.
But it just didn't seem to suit what I was seeing. While they may have matched up some of the beats, like there was a bit when he shoots and then there's a drum beat at the same time kind of thing. But it's just matching up as in these are 1920s gangsters.
Yeah. There is always that weird disconnect.
Like they could have, you know, I'm not saying you've got to play 20s music, but if you're going for up-to-date modern hip-hop or whatever it is, I know nothing about hip-hop. Just FYI, I have no idea. That could be a song from the 80s, for all. But yeah, like it just seemed too disjoint from the visuals.
Oh yeah, no, I wouldn't say it was the ideal choice of music. Incidentally, that was another. Just you know, thinking about how much of a difference music does make in trailers. I think we've probably mentioned before how the Avengers trailers. I was kind of underwhelmed by the first one because it did use, I think it was a Nine Inch Nails song or something, and I didn't think it worked at all. And then they went for the more conventional kind of orchestra with the second one, which I thought worked way, way better. Similarly with trailers for Lincoln. That's another film that's obviously on our radar, and the buzz is kind of that it's you know, amazing performances but a little bit bogged down in the politics, doesn't really get under the skin of Lincoln, and obviously a bit of Oscar bait going on. But it does show what a difference it makes. Well, I remember when I watched the first trailer, it had music that was very similar to the War Horse soundtrack. And I remember just being like, oh god, more schmaltz and kind of just
John Williams turning the handle.
Yeah, exactly. Just churning out another one of his kind of his emotional heartstring tugger. And then the second one came out, possibly John Williams again, but the tune was so much better and worked so much better with it. And it really, that kind of made a U-turn on my excitement for the film. I went from kind of thinking, yeah, another Spielberg War Horse, essentially, you know, almost unbearable levels of, you've got to cry now. This is the part where you cry kind of thing. This is the part where you feel inspired. And this could be really interesting. And obviously we know that Daniel Day-Lewis will put in another amazing performance, which is just, you know, basically a reason in itself to go see the film.
Yeah.
I was going to talk about Lincoln later, but we pretty much talked about it now. Obviously that's coming out in January, just in time for the Oscars. We'll discuss... it'll be our first year anniversary of the podcast, because the very first podcast...
It was day before Oscars, wasn't it?
Yeah, so we'll come full circle and we'll be talking about who we reckon for this year. We did pretty damn well last year.
We got all three.
I seem to remember. we called them.
It wasn't too tricky last
year. Let's not downplay our incredible achievements too much.
Everyone called it.
so we'll see if we can guess this time as well.
I'm finding it hard to bet against Daniel Day-Lewis.
I think for best actor, I mean, I'd have to kind of look back at some of the films of the past, because there will be some that have slipped my mind. There's no obvious powerhouse performance that's coming. The only one I can think of possibly is The Master, which has Philip Seymour Hoffman and Jacqueline Phoenix. I'm not quite sure which one of them is the lead. I mean, it seems to give almost equal weight.
Yeah.
To both of them, so perhaps they'll just draw lots or something. But you know, the buzz around that is they both put in excellent performances as well, so maybe they could have a chance. But we'll save this discussion because that's fertile territory for another
podcast. It's complete speculation. Yeah. The film's not even out.
But The Master is obviously another film that's coming out, which I'm immensely looking forward to. You know, there's that whole controversy about whether it's about Scientology and things. For me, that's really just kind of by the by. It's all about whether it's an excellent film. And apparently it is. Apparently it's not as accessible maybe as There Will Be Blood. And There Will Be Blood wasn't a massively accessible film to begin with. But the one thing you can guarantee is that it's always a great experience. Even if as a kind of film, it might not be the most coherent or the sort of best narrative or something, but it's always a bit like Terrence Malick. You always know you're coming out of it saying that was a worthwhile thing to watch.
But yeah, like on that note, Life of Pi, because
that's
going to be all over the place. He's in a boat, there's a tiger, but he's not. What?
Have you read the book?
A while ago,
yeah. Because I haven't read the book, but I've heard that it was considered unfilmable. However, the buzz from the film festivals is that it's actually really good.
Yeah.
So, and it's 3D. But, you know, in a way that maybe adds to the cinematic experience, though I've heard that like 50 times before and not yet been proved to be true.
Yeah, the only one that I can really agree with that on would be Dread. I didn't see Avatar in IMAX, but I'm assuming it did.
It was worth it, like, just the initial wow factor. But then Avatar was basically just all wow factor, and once that worn off, basically when I came out of the IMAX, I was thinking, this was amazing, what a great film. And I watched it just on a normal cinema, again in 3D, and I thought, it's not bad. And I saw it on TV just over a couple of months ago, it was shown for the first time, I was like, this isn't very good. This is not nearly as good as I remember. Life of Pi looks like a similarly incredible visual experience, but it does have the kind of pedigree of Ang Lee as the director as well, which makes me hope that there will be substance as well as the style, the obvious style that it does have.
But I was just thinking something like how on earth they're going to do some sequences. It's going to be bizarre.
But again, you know, that's I love it when this happens, when there is a film that you genuinely can't imagine how it's going to go, especially when, you know, most films you can to some degree predict the plot beats, you know, the emotional arcs and things, or how they're going to structure it. And then you just get films like The Master, like Life of Pi, where you
really Guardians of the Galaxy. We got no idea what's going to happen in there.
That's just going to be a complete curveball. But yeah, in contrast to Lincoln, where you can obviously you know he dies at the end, but
spoilers.
But you kind of still know the beats they're going to hit almost beforehand. And that's got nothing to do with the fact that it's based on, you know, a true story, as it were, but just the fact that, you know, structurally you know how it's going to go.
I thought the Vampire Hunter one was the true story one, and then this was the fiction they added.
As a actual historian, I can tell you that in fact it's a blend of the two. That there were vampires, but Lincoln didn't have time to hunt them. He was too busy with other things.
It was his brother Jeff Lincoln that did
it. He sent off other people to do his dirty work, which is a bit disappointing. But yeah, that's the true story for you folks. I mean, is there any other films that... I personally... End of Watch is that cop film coming out with Jake Gyllenhaal. I remember looking at the time and being like, this looks a bit generic. But a couple of people have been talking to me about it. It showed in America, and I was talking to someone about it, and they said it was really good.
Oh.
And that it was actually, you know, not as kind of traditional and generic as you might think. In fact, is a really interesting spin on it, and really thrilling, apparently. This is the buzz coming from America, who obviously get all the films before us, except for Skyfall, which I think we get first. So that'll be our exclusive. Nick's missing out with his eternal grudge against Daniel Craig, but I will be thoroughly enjoying myself. I'm pretty sure, End of Watch. There's a couple of smaller films that coming out that I'm interested in, obviously. I don't know whether Beast of the Southern Wild was a massive festival hit at, I can't remember which festival, but it was really popular, and there was kind of some serious love going on for it. That's coming out this Friday, so I'm going to be going to see that while you're off on your travels. So I'll be releasing a solo podcast with disastrous results, I imagine. And then the final one that I personally wanted to talk about is Rust and Bone, which is, I think it's made by the director who did A Prophet, which was that prison film that I have not seen, but is apparently excellent. This is his latest one, which is in no way similar. It's Marion Cotillard starring as a killer whale trainer. And obviously the name suggests that they're not all friendly, and she gets horribly injured by one of them during a performance. And then she bonds with, I think he's just a street fighter, a kind of bare knuckle brawler, and they form an unlikely romance / friendship.
Oh.
So it's a totally different direction. The trailer looked very, very good, and so I'm interested to see that one as well, even though I haven't seen The Prophet, which is probably something I should get onto, but another time maybe. Any other films that you can think of?
They've announced a bit more about Sin City 2 and Machete Kills.
Yeah. Okay, you're a big Rodriguez fan, of course.
Yeah, so. I think he just does exciting, crazy films that are fun and thrilling to watch. And yeah, there's always more that you can. You always feel you could go deeper and like think about it more, but you never want to. Like it's all there. He puts it on screen.
Yeah.
Like Machete, I've seen someone wrote a thing about how it was one of the best examples talking about Mexican immigration and U.S. relations with that. Mm. And yeah, I can see it's all there, but I was there for the machetes.
Yeah, didn't he also use someone's entrails to like abseil down a building or something?
Yes, it's also good training for doctors.
it's
got everything.
Yeah, it's just the ultimate learning tool. Which are you more excited for? Sin City 2 or Machete Kills?
It's a very tough call. Mm. I'm.
If you could only have one being made, if someone said right now, okay, we've got
to
cut.
I'd want Sin City 2 to be made, but I'm more worried Sin City 2 will flop.
Okay, right.
I think Machete Kills, I can't really see him getting Machete Kills wrong.
Yeah, I suppose it's more. I wouldn't go so far as to say formulaic, but in the sense that Sin City, it was a bit of a wild card, you know, it could have gone any way. And it turned out obviously to be great.
And also that Sin City was, you know, based on the graphic novel, which I believe he's gone and got Miller to write more for.
Oh, right, okay.
So I think Miller is still involved.
Yes.
Yeah,
he is,
yeah. And so they've written more, and again, it could go. Yeah, it could feel more like a cash in. It's been a while since they did the first one.
It's been a long time.
Whereas Machete was 2008 or 9.
Yeah, it's relatively recent.
And then. Yeah, it's not formulaic, but it's not as out there.
Yeah, I was just.
And.
I can see what you mean. Yeah, there's just. You can imagine Machete Kills being at worst sort of mediocre, whereas Sin City 2 could potentially be a disaster.
Or it could be amazing, like the first.
Exactly.
And like Rodriguez knows how to make a film like Machete. Mm. He probably does do it in 2 weeks.
Yeah, he's doing them both pretty much on top of each other. I mean, their release dates are within a few months of each other, so he's clearly not kind of,
He's not a man to faff about, is he?
No, he's not. Unfortunately, he still can't get that Deadpool film moving, can he?
No.
Despite the excellent script and Ryan Reynolds being, I think, Wolverine aside as just a bad film, I think his potential, he could be a good Deadpool. I think his kind of style works.
If you don't do Deadpool, like the bizarre take they took on him in Wolverine.
Yeah.
But the entire point of Deadpool is his humour, and they went, no, we'll make him completely silent.
Mute. It's as sharp as mouth. Oh dear, we could talk about Wolverine for a while.
One of the only films I could think of where the game was better than the film.
Oh yes, it was supposed to be good.
The Time Game was one of my favourite hack and slash games. Mm. And actually made me enjoy the film more because I think of the game.
Although we'll save this discussion for the Alex and Nick Game podcast, which of course we'll never ever happen, I'm afraid. Okay, cool. So I mean I'm not sure there's anything else particularly big news about films, not that I can think of.
You better do your Invictus review.
Okay. Well, I saw Invictus.
You're not reneging on it now.
It came out quite a few years ago. It was tipped for some Oscars at the time. I don't think it won any. Or if it did, I think it was the kind of consolation Oscars, that they gave to like Dark Knight and things. I can see why it didn't win. I mean, to be honest, I haven't seen a bad Clint Eastwood film. I know that there are a couple that people say are bad, and I just haven't seen them. Like, Hereafter got pretty poor reviews. I haven't seen that. But, you know, the ones I have seen, Gran Torino, Million Dollar Baby, there was a couple others as well. And they've all been, you know, decent to great. Invictus, I think, comes in more the decent category. Some of the dialogue is agonizingly on the nose. I mean, it's just outright telling you what you should know about the circumstances in a really clunky way. Morgan Freeman as Nelson Mandela. He's good, but I find that Morgan Freeman he's one of the actors, he's just too distinctive. Mm. And so I can never just see him as Mandela. I see him as Morgan Freeman mimicking Mandela. I don't know, I just, whether it's his voice, even though he's obviously doing a different accent, you've still got the kind of the tones in there of Morgan Freeman, which are so distinctive. And it just, he's fine. He's not bad. It's not kind of embarrassing, but it's certainly not like Daniel Day-Lewis with Lincoln, where he seems to almost be absorbed in the role, and you can sometimes you can barely see him, like the actor, through kind of Lincoln's appearance. Matt Damon is as the Springboks rugby captain is good. I think in fact all the performances are good, but I think that's just the film. It's fine, but there's nothing special about it. There's no kind of electrifying conversations or encounters with different characters. All the conflict feels, it's there, but you know, it kind of then goes away a bit and it comes back a little bit more and stuff like that. The rugby scenes are very well shot though. As someone who is way more a fan of football or soccer, to our three or two American listeners.
I doubt we have any American.
No, we don't. I was just trying to make us sound more international. As more of a fan of football, even so, I still found the rugby scenes were shot in a way that made it quite exciting. And at the same time, you could tell what was going on and stuff like that, which I felt was a strength that easily they could have got that wrong.
Yeah.
Because when I watch rugby on TV, it's really boring. So, yeah, I think it's just a decent film. I can definitely see why it hasn't won Oscars. I think, and it's definitely weaker than a lot of Clint Eastwood's efforts. But at the same time, it's a decent way to spend 2 hours. You'll come out saying that was good, but not great. So yeah, that's Invictus. In case you haven't seen it and somehow wanted to or are thinking about it, despite it's been several years. But we did promise you a review, so there you are. So we'll be back, if not next week. I mean, I'll be seeing Beasts of the Southern Wild definitely at some point. I don't know whether it'll be on release day or slightly afterwards. So we might meld it with the Skyfall podcast, which will definitely be up on the day of release or the day after. So there'll be one for that. So that's something to look forward to. And in the meantime, I think that's it from us.
Yep.
So thanks for listening. And we'll see you in a few days.